we need to educate our thinkers, our motivated airmen, on just like the really basics of how buying stuff works, because they're the ones who have these really great ideas about what we need. But I try and explain to people that when you come ask contracting to buy something for you, try and explain it to me like a game of charades, right? Tell me what it does. What does it look like? Where does it fit? What does it do? How does it function?
Welcome back, Black Snakes. Your host today, Senior Master Sergeant Leslie Kaiser, First Sergeant, Maintenance Squadron. And I'm excited about this podcast today because on air with us is a team that is small but powerful. Just because you ask nicely doesn't mean you always get what you want, but they can definitely work with you and get to an agreement. I don't know if you guessed it or not, but behind the scenes, this is our contracting office, working diligently to make sure you guys get what you need at the base. So today on air, we have the officer in charge and non-commissioned officer in charge, Lieutenant Travis Craik and Mesh Sergeant Lisa Kroos. Team, I hope I did you guys justice with that intro. I'm excited to learn what we have going on today because I feel like you guys do a lot behind the scenes that no one will ever know about. So, Lieutenant Craik, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
All right. Good morning, Shirt. Again, my name is Lieutenant Travis Craik, and I enlisted with the 122nd Fighter Wing in 2002, right out of high school. I spent my first six-year enlistment as a Fuel Systems Maintenance Drill Status Guardsman, or DSG, and while I am somewhat mechanically inclined, I had a very low passion for that type of work. So during my first year of reenlistment in 2009, I sought out an opportunity in contracting, which I had heard about through the grapevine, and I've been here ever since. That puts me at nearly 22 years of service, so I guess that makes me a gray-haired lieutenant. Although I've been in contracting this long, I've only had one opportunity for a long-form deployment. In 2016, I spent 6 months as the sole contracting officer in Tunisia, which is in North Africa, and it was such an amazing experience. On average, I think I spent half my days wearing civilian clothes, growing a beard, and traveling through the local communities, obtaining supplies and services in support of our very small mission. And as far as commissioning is concerned, NGB pushed hard back around the 2017-2018 timeframe to gain a commissioned position for the for Air National Guard contracting offices, and ours dropped here at the 122nd in 2019. So as the existing base contracting officer at that time, I pursued that opportunity and attended officer training school in 2020, right after COVID began. That was an interesting experience. It's highly unusual to go from enlisted to commissioned and return from school to the same exact career field, let alone the same type of work, but I truly love what we do. It's been incredibly rewarding, and I've got a lot of years left in me, so long as Colonel Milliman will have me.
Mash Sergeant Kroos, what about you?
Oh, hi, I'm Lisa Kroos. Not quite as glamorous of a path, but I started out in 2003, not really sure about college, not sure what to do. I worked for a business that had closed, so I decided to join the Air Force. I joined active duty, and I took the first spot available because I thought it was like the movies where you decide to enlist and you hop on a bus, and all the jobs I had picked had long enlistment wait times to get in. So the recruiter said, I had a guy that was supposed to leave next week. He got arrested last night. Do you want a spot? I said, sure. What's the job? And he said, it's pumping gas. And I said, sure, absolutely. So 12 years later, for 12 years, I remained in POL as a fuel truck driver. I spent my first enlistment at Eielson Air Force Base in Alaska. I said that was the only place I didn't want to go, and that's what I got. But it was an amazing experience. I would have never chose to move there, but it was just cool. It was one of a kind. From there, I decided to join the Washington Air National Guard in a Pallas Chase program to go to college full time. I also was POL there. And then after spending way too much money getting a degree in a hobby of interior design, I decided to go back to full time and applied for a full time vacancy here at the Indiana Air National Guard. I'm originally from Toledo, Ohio, so this was kind of a way to get back east of the Mississippi and back home. I think it was 2016 when one of the deployments went on. We had a backfill opportunity within LRS as a training manager, and I took that opportunity and applied for it full-time when it became vacant, and I was the training manager for LRS for 6 years. After 18 years in LRS, I just kind of wanted to try something new, and I had never heard of contracting and had no idea what they did, so I went for it because I crave variety, and it ended up being a great experience so far. I've been here for 2 years, and I still feel like I have no idea what I'm doing, which is perfect for me because I don't thrive when it's mundane.
Right, so. Or boring, or yeah. So we went from growing a beard in Africa to enlisting and getting sent everywhere you didn't want to go and finally ending up hopefully to your dream job where it doesn't get boring. I'm excited because I don't know a lot about contracting. So thank you both for being here and explaining it to us. I just know what I hear about when people don't get what they want and they blame you guys. So sorry in advance.
All the time.
Yeah. So with that, can you just help us understand the 30,000-foot view when it comes to contracting?
I'll do my best. Anyone who's worked with me for the last 5, 10, 15 years knows that I have no shortage of words, so I'll try to keep this as concise as possible. Sergeant Gross is laughing right now, quietly. She would actually do a really great job of explaining this. She really undervalues her ability to explain things, but I'll take this one. I like to think of contracting as having a kind of a three-pronged approach. We don't just spend money, so we have those three prongs in my mind are risk management on one side, and what I think of there is like a bag of cash. Like if we just had a gigantic slush fund or petty cash fund and you needed something and you just went to finance and said, hey, give me $10,000, give me $100,000, give me $1,000,000, they just hand you the money. You could go out and spend that money in the local community or wherever you need to go to obtain the supplies or services or construction services that you need, and you would get what you need at the end of the day, and the mission would continue, and we'd be fine. But there's no risk management in that process, and there's just no way for us to achieve the goals that we need to achieve in contracting. And so the reason we have the process as we have is to manage the risk of being stewards of the taxpayer dollar. And so while we have risk management on one side, or as one prong, we also do our best to obtain what we call best value. So that's not necessarily the lowest price, though that is generally what we pursue and achieve, but best value is our goal. And then the third prong, the third facet, and it's a really big part of contracting, is like socioeconomic goals. It's small business rules that we have to follow to support what some people call the backbone of the American economy, small businesses. And it's not just small businesses. There's a lot of subcategories of small business. And so I think that kind of sums up the 30,000-foot view, you know, as best I could.
I like that three-prong approach: risk management, best value, socioeconomical goals. Hopefully I summed that up correctly. I'm learning on the fly here with you guys too. So with contracting, having those guidelines and parameters, kind of just like every career field, you have to operate in your scope of practice essentially. So what does your training look like? Like what – do you need a background? Is it just getting in the career field? Is it backfilling? What does training look like for you guys?
So remember how I said I liked variety?
Yeah.
That's where this comes into play, because just when you think you kind of know what you're doing, it's you have to follow a different set of rules. So what's really fun is when you join contracting, you go to Air Force Tech School and you learn everything you think you know about contracting. You get home here to the Air National Guard and they say, just kidding, that's Air Force. You work for the Army. Brain dump everything you just learned. None of those rules apply. And like no offense to the Army, but it feels like we're a little bit behind sometimes with the Army rules. I think there's less risk willing to be taken with the Army rules. So some of our thresholds are lower. Our policies are longer, and that can be pretty frustrating because we learn these like really cool Air Force things at tech school, and then I'm getting ready to deploy, right? So I'm heading out the door to go work for the Air Force and have to relearn all their training again. So that'll be really interesting when I get over there. I guess I'll have to figure it out because we don't do that here. We don't use the same writing software to write contracts. We don't follow the same rules. They do follow AFIs. So I'll have to get over there and train on the job, I suppose.
Yeah. And our certification process has changed a lot over the last, since I've been in almost 15 years in contracting, it's changed a lot. And I think Sergeant Kroos is a lot more familiar with the current state.
So I just recently got my construction credential.
Yeah, she knows more than I do about construction.
only on paper, not real life. But it was like a way to make some of my potpourri history make sense because I told you I got that really fun interior design degree. I pursued my construction management certificate through Indiana Tech and then was able to do the construction certificate through Defense Acquisition University. So it sort of makes it all make sense. I don't think I'm an expert in any one of the categories, but it was like a cool way to weave that web for all these weird kind of random experiences I had and make them connect together.
So you just took an opportunity given to you going to tech school, took that opportunity and accelerated it. And that, I'm assuming, does that translate to the civilian sector too?
Oh, absolutely. So I think Air Force, big Air Force, is really struggling to keep people past, I think even senior airmen at this point, because contracting directly translates, like you said in the beginning, to so many civilian roles, to where your skills are very translatable, they're very valuable. And so Air Force has a hard time keeping people up to like once they get their five level because civilian companies just snatch them up.
Right? But that's the beauty of the Guard too, right? You don't have to be full-time. You can do both. You can still serve your country while serving outside and contracting too. I think that's cool. So contracting sounds like it overlaps a lot with other branches. You work directly with the Army, U.S. law. Do you guys ever have communication barriers or?
I think mostly with our people here because you know, we have some maintainers, I'll call out your unit.
Be nice.
No, they're amazing and they have fresh ideas and they want to just go so fast and they're so innovative. And sometimes it's not fun to like stagnate their process or progress because, we have these rules that seem archaic to them that we have to follow. And I feel like an IRS agent sometimes I say because, I'm not here to say no, but we just have to follow these other rules that don't make sense to them or don't apply to them because they're Army, right? So I don't know that it's not a language barrier, but I feel like it's a speed bump that isn't part of their language, but it's part of ours.
And right.
I don't like when we have to be those people for them.
And maybe it's just not a no. Solid, firm, period. It's just not right now because we have to get through these speed bumps like you mentioned.
And it still could be a yes and not so much not right now, but it's just like we're going to be, treading through molasses instead of the fast lane the way you want to.
Right.
The only time we say no really is like a hard no is if it's illegal or unethical or we simply cannot do it because we don't have the bandwidth. We don't do a lot of massive projects around here, but if the base were to somehow dump $100 million worth of construction work on us, that flat out could not be done with this team. I would have to say no, not because it's unethical or illegal. I just literally can't do that.
Like you would need more people.
Oh, absolutely.
To do that. Okay.
And people who are qualified in the career field. And so whenever we're stalling, it's not because, I don't know, not because we're jerks. We just have processes that take a long time.
You hit on ethical. Do you guys operate under any ethical laws? And ethical is like that funny gray area. Maybe we think it's black and white and you're like, no, it's not ethical. What does that look like when you say ethical?
Well, ethics in contracting are actually pretty unique. it's not just general ethics. Like, we actually have to take an annual course called acquisition ethics. So it's a very unique implications with ethics when it comes to money. So when I think of acquisition ethics, I often think of like undue command influence. You know, like, yes, we have a boss. We work for an O6, but an O6 or an O10, like, no one can tell the contracting officer to do something that is in violation of the regulation, because that's against the law.
Right.
Right. Like, if we're doing our competitive contracting process and we have reason to award to contractor ABC, we can't be told to go with contractor XYZ. Like, we just can't. That's illegal. So you have to be careful, especially if you're kind of lower ranking in contracting, not to allow that undue command influence to affect the way you make your decisions. And the other thing, of course, is on the industry side. So when you're working with contractors, especially contractors where you have a relationship over a long period of time, like a big construction project, mm-hmm. you develop relationships. It's the natural course of doing business. We are considered business advisors, and we form these relationships with civilians who run these companies. And when you form those relationships, you have to be very careful not to get wrapped up in different situations that might present themselves, whether that's full-blown fraud or collusion or what's the other word I'm thinking of?
Favoritism,
yeah.
Right, you just might have a favorite easy or contractor to work with or
something. Well, and Fort Wayne is not that large of a community, so to diversify the people you work with is a little more complicated when it's a small community.
Right.
Yeah, I personally have never been offered a kickback, but it's something they cover a lot in our contingency contracting training. It's like when you're in a foreign environment doing what we do, it's very, it's not uncommon, and it can be actually customary for contractors to try to offer you actual, like, cash in hand. Like, hey.
They think it might be a thank you.
Yeah.
And it's considered a kickback.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. So those are the types of things we have to be mindful of.
Mindful of. Gotcha. They just think they're being nice, and maybe it's in their custom or something, but really it could be defined as a kickback for contracting. So, best practices. Someone on base needs something done. They submit a contract. What does that process look like? Or is there any best practices you would like to share that we could do better coming to you guys too?
Offer us patience and grace. Next question, please. No, but seriously, our processes are so cumbersome. And while we do our best to streamline as much as possible, there's just no getting around the fact that we call it our procurement action lead time, or PALT. It's exponentially longer than you would see in the civilian sector and in your personal life. If you want to buy something, you go buy it.
Right.
It doesn't work that way for us. We don't decide we need something and then we have it tomorrow. So the sooner, I'd say in response to your question, the sooner you identify your requirement to contracting, not just to finance, don't just tell finance you need it or that you want to earmark the money for it or whatever, like, let contracting know too, if it's going to be a contract, contracted requirement. So the sooner you identify a requirement to our office, the greater our chance of success, both in fulfilling the requirement, but also in obtaining the best value for the taxpayer. And everyone listening to this is a taxpayer, so you should appreciate that. And one more thing I'm thinking right now is that the best thing you can do, as we call it, our mission partners, contracting mission partner, is to try to trust our expertise, but also the leadership we have. Because in Indiana, our leadership, both on the military command side and on the procurement authority side, is fantastically supportive. And we're doing our best to fulfill the mission that we have.
Well, and you guys alluded to, it's not always a no. Maybe it's a not right now. We need more time. We don't have the bandwidth. We will get you to a yes. We might have to tweak things here and there and then do your due diligence to operate under those three pillars, as you said, risk management, best value, and then those socioeconomical goals for our Fort Wayne area as well. Define Or can you elaborate on finance versus contracting? So they go to finance and they want money, but then they have to come to contracting. When do you use them separate and together?
Finance is your dad with the checkbook, yeah. And contracting is your mom who like really does all the shopping.
That is such a good way to put it. Okay. So finance is dad with the checkbook, mom really executes.
But really at the end of the day, we are all responsible for appropriations law.
Okay.
So color of money and is it lawful and ethical is, you know, we share that same value and goals with finance.
That's good to know. And I really like your analogy. So how can we work best with you guys? We go to mom, we go to dad. How can we work best with contracting as a base?
I think we need to educate our thinkers, our motivated airmen, on just like the really basics of how buying stuff works, because they're the ones who have these really great ideas about what we need. And we work mostly with the resource advisors, right? So they understand the process, but they're not the ones asking for the binders or the tables or, you know, jack stands, right? So those are the airmen. I think the best way to get them what they need is to teach them how to ask for it.
Okay.
So we're all consumers, right? We all know how to shop. And I think that everybody out here tries to think that they, you know, do the best value. They do a lot of research when they want to buy something, especially the more expensive it is. Unfortunately, sometimes they spend a lot of time doing the research. They get a package to us and we can't even buy from the company they want. Maybe it's a large business. Maybe they're not registered with SAM.gov, which is a requirement to do a government contract. So if we could get them to define their need and then come to us, right? They don't need to do all the research on where to get it, but I try and explain to people that when you come ask contracting to buy something for you, try and explain it to me like a game of charades, right? Tell me what it does. What does it look like? Where does it fit? What does it do? How does it function? Instead of coming to me saying, oh, I have this part number because I need to buy this very specific thing, because I don't want to waste their time. I don't want to waste our time. And if they've already spent weeks researching something and we have to say, no, sorry, we can't buy it from them, that's kind of crushing. And
it creates that barrier that we were talking about.
But if they came right from the beginning saying like, hey, I want this thing and I don't really know where to start. And whether that's communicating through the resource advisors or their flight chiefs or call us, like, oh, we tell people just if you're ever unsure, call us and let us help you get what you want, because we want you to have what you want and we don't want to tell you no. But maybe taking a step back and being able to communicate and translate what your actual need is a little better.
The need, not versus the product that you found.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Because you guys have to shop from what it sounds like, a registered.
Well, it just depends. It depends on how much it costs. And it depends is literally a tagline. In
so we can just go to Amazon.
Oh, don't
share
don't get
what
me started
want.
On Amazon, please.
Darn it. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Lieutenant Craig, Master Sergeant Kroos. Thank you for your time today, giving us a little bit more insight into your position on base and within the Air Force. And it just reminds me, you don't know what you don't know. And today, I think we learned a little bit more about what contracting actually does and how to work best with both of you and your team of four. So Black Snakes, back to you to do great things. Please share the show. We want this to be the fastest growing military podcast out there, because we're not competitive or anything, but it grows with the good people like you and listening and sharing. So until next time, storm hell.
This is the official podcast of the 122nd Fighter Wing. Views and opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of the 122nd Fighter Wing, Air National Guard, or United States government. No endorsement of any person or business is ever intended.